A Katra podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. Welcome back, everyone. Today we're diving into something, well, something that might genuinely shock you. It definitely asks you to rethink how you see the world.
We're looking at Steven Pinker's huge, incredibly influential book, The Better Angels of Our Nature.
And the core idea, let's just put it right out there, it completely contradicts what you probably feel from watching the news every day.
It really does. Pinker's argument, backed by just tons and tons of data, is that violence, and he means all kinds, war, murder, torture, even things like domestic violence, it's been declining steadily, dramatically, for basically all of human history.
Which sounds unbelievable, right? Given the constant stream of conflict and crisis we hear about.
Exactly. But that's why this deep dive feels so necessary. It's like an antidote to that constant negativity, that feeling that things are always getting worse.
Pinker is essentially asking, are we making real progress or are we just stuck in cycles of violence? And his answer, based on stats, is that we are probably living in the most peaceful time ever for our species.
Yeah, it challenges that gut feeling that the world is just chaotic and dangerous. He suggests our baseline for normal violence is skewed by today, and the past was, well, unbelievably more brutal.
Okay, so before we get into the argument itself, who is Steven Pinker? Why should we listen to him on this?
Right. So he's a big name. Johnstone Family Professor of Psychology at Harvard. He's primarily a cognitive scientist, very famous for work like The Language Instinct, a major public intellectual.
And that background matters here, doesn't it? He's not just a historian.
Absolutely critical. He brings together evolutionary psychology, thinking about, you know, our basic human toolkit for both violence and peace with really rigorous data analysis. He's committed to looking at the numbers, the long-term trends, not just anecdotes or ideology.
So he's got this framework from psychology about human nature.
Exactly. He talks about our inner demons, things like wanting dominance or revenge or getting swept up in ideology, and our better angels like empathy, self-control, reason, fairness.
Uh-huh.
And the key point is, the decline in violence isn't because our basic nature changed biologically. It's because we've built societies, institutions, environments that do a better job of holding back the demons and encouraging the angels.
So it's about the conditions changing, not the people fundamentally.
That's the core idea. We've created environments that favor cooperation more often.
Okay, let's get into the book itself, the overview. What's he trying to prove?
Fundamentally, he wants to demonstrate with overwhelming evidence that this decline of violence is a real historical fact, maybe one of the most important things that's happened in human history, but one we barely notice.
And the scope is massive, right? He goes way back.
Oh, yeah. All the way back to prehistory. And he really takes on that romantic idea of the peaceful, noble savage.
Right. The idea that life before civilization was somehow idyllic.
Yeah. He argues the opposite. Based on archaeological evidence, skeletal remains, ethnographic studies of non-state societies, the chances of dying violently were staggeringly high. We're talking maybe 10, 20, sometimes up to 60% of male deaths in some groups.
60%? Wow. That just reframes everything.
Doesn't it? It suggests that living without a state was incredibly dangerous, far more than living within even a flawed modern one.
So how does he structure this huge argument?
It's really methodical. First, he documents six major historical declines in violence, showing the data for each one. Then he explains why these declines happened, focusing on five key historical forces, sort of like the engines driving the process.
Okay, let's walk through those declines. That seems like the heart of the evidence. Where does he start? The pacification process.
Yes, the very first big drop. This is about the transition from anarchy, from hunter-gatherer bands and tribal societies, to the first agricultural states with governments.
And you mentioned the violence rates back then.
They were horrific by today's standards. Forget modern crime waves. Pinker cites data suggesting medieval European homicide rates, for instance, were maybe 10 to 50 times higher than they are now in Europe. Think about that. Maybe 50 murders per 100,000 people annually.
Unimaginable. So what changed?
The state. This is where he brings in Thomas Hobbes and the idea of the Leviathan.
The all-powerful government that stops the war of all against all.
Exactly. Pinker calls the state, with its monopoly on the legitimate use of force, the single greatest peacemaking invention ever. Before the state, if someone insults your family, you might have to retaliate. It's a constant cycle of feuds and uncertainty.
A state takes over that role of punishment and deterrence.
Right. It disarms the populace to some extent and says, we handle justice now. It breaks the cycle of revenge and creates a basic level of safety needed for everything else to develop. It solves that security dilemma.
Okay, so the state provides basic order. That's the first huge step down. What's the next decline?
That leads into the civilizing process. This draws on the work of sociologist Norbert Elias. As states got stronger and, crucially, as commerce and cities grew, people had to interact more with strangers.
Not just your family or tribe anymore.
Right. And you couldn't just, you know, fly off the handle or resort to violence as easily if you wanted to trade, get along in courtly society, or just function in these denser networks.
So people had to develop more self-control, manners.
Right. Pretty much. Elias charted how, over centuries, especially in Europe, there was this gradual internalization of norms against impulsive violence. Things like table manners, codes of conduct, they weren't just superficial. They reflected a deeper psychological shift towards long-term thinking and restraining immediate urges.
And you see this in the data, too.
Yeah, that's when you see European homicide rates begin their long, slow, but incredibly steady decline, starting way back in the late Middle Ages and continuing right up to the 20th century. External rules became internal habits.
Okay, so state control, then more self-control. What follows?
The humanitarian revolution. This is really centered on the Enlightenment, the 17th and 18th centuries. Thinkers like Cesare Beccaria, Voltaire, Locke.
Applying reason to social problems.
Exactly. They started to argue that things previously taken for granted, like judicial torture, gruesome public executions, debtors' prisons, religious persecution, slavery, even dueling, weren't just cruel, they were irrational, inefficient, counterproductive.
So it wasn't just about feeling bad for people, it was about logic.
That's a key part of Pinker's argument. Reason played a huge role. These thinkers made logical cases against these barbaric practices, and gradually, states started abolishing them. It was a major expansion of empathy, driven significantly by rational argument.
Okay, moving into more modern times. The 20th century had horrific wars, the worst ever. How does that fit with the decline?
That's the paradox, right? But Pinker focuses on what happened after 1945. He calls it the long peace. For the first time in history, the major world powers, the great powers, basically stopped fighting wars directly against each other.
The U.S. and Soviet Union during the Cold War, for example, or the U.S. and China now, or France and Germany.
Right. It's unprecedented. And he argues it's driven by a few things. Nuclear deterrence made great power war seem suicidal, definitely. But also the spread of democracy. Democracies rarely fight each other. And then there's capitalist peace.
Explain that one a bit more. Gentle commerce.
Yeah, the idea that extensive international trade and economic interdependence make war incredibly costly and irrational. If your economies are deeply intertwined, like the US and China or Germany and France, war doesn't just destroy the enemy, it destroys your own prosperity.
So other countries become more valuable alive as trading partners than dead as conquered enemies.
That's the logic. It creates a positive sum game where cooperation is usually more beneficial than conflict.
And this piece didn't just apply to the big players.
No, that leads into the new piece, which he identifies as starting around the end of the Cold War. Here, the data shows declines in all kinds of organized conflict globally. Civil wars, interstate wars, outside the great powers, even genocides became less frequent and less deadly compared to earlier periods.
Why?
He credits things like the increased role of international organizations, UN peacekeeping, global norms against conquest, and continued economic integration.
Okay, that covers large-scale violence. What's the final decline?
The rights revolutions. This is really about the post-World War II era and ongoing social movements. It's about expanding the circle of empathy who we consider worthy of moral concern.
So civil rights, women's rights, gay rights, children's rights.
Exactly. Animal rights, too. All these movements challenge forms of violence and discrimination that were once considered normal or acceptable within societies. Think about domestic violence, corporal punishment in schools, hate crimes, animal cruelty.
Things that wouldn't have even been seen as violence in the same way centuries ago.
Precisely. There's been a huge reduction in these smaller scale, more intimate forms of violence as our moral circle has widened, again, often driven by rational arguments about fairness and rights.
Wow. Okay, that's a lot of ground covered. Six major downward trends. So if we try to pull out the main messages, the big why behind all this, what are the key themes?
Well, the first one, maybe the most fundamental for us today, is the primacy of data over anecdote.
Right, we touched on this. Don't trust your gut feeling based on the news.
Yeah, our perception is just so easily hijacked by vivid stories, by fear. If it bleeds, it leads. Pinker hammers this home. You have to look at the long-term statistics, the quantitative evidence, not just isolated events, to understand the real trajectory.
It's a call for a more statistical, less emotional view of the world, in a way.
In a way, yes. A more rational one. Which connects to the second theme, the civilizing effect of interconnectedness, or what used to be called gentle commerce.
The idea that trade makes us more peaceful.
Because it shifts incentives. Conflict is often zero-sum, I win, you lose. Trade, especially complex, modern trade, is positive sum. We both benefit more from cooperating than from fighting. It encourages foresight, trust, and seeing others as partners, not just rivals.
Okay, data beats anecdote, trade beats plunder. What else?
A crucial point about human nature being complex and contingent. This isn't a story about humans suddenly becoming angels.
Right, you said that earlier. We still have those inner demons.
Absolutely. We still have capacities for dominance, revenge, tribalism, ideology-fueled cruelty. The point isn't that those disappear. It's that we've gotten better at designing political, economic, and social systems that constrain those demons and activate our better angels. Empathy, self-control, reason, fairness. Progress comes from better systems, not better biology.
That makes sense. The environment channels our existing nature in better directions.
You got it. And the final big driver is what he calls the escalator of reason, the idea that the increasing application of knowledge, science, and rational argumentation to human problems has been a major force for peace.
How so?
Reason helps us recognize the futility and self-destructiveness of cycles of violence. It allows us to step back, analyze costs and benefits, understand other perspectives, and design better institutions like democracy, human rights, effective justice systems that make violence less appealing or necessary.
So thinking clearly leads to behaving better, essentially.
Over the long run, Pinker argues, yes. Reason helps us overcome our more primitive impulses.
Okay, the book is famous for some really memorable lines or ideas that capture these big concepts. Let's highlight a few.
Sure. The big one we started with. We are probably living in the most peaceful moment in our species' time on Earth.
Just confronting that chronic pessimism, it's not wishful thinking. It's, according to him, a statistical reality, a basis for evidence-based hope, maybe.
Exactly. Then there's the tribute to government. The Leviathan is the greatest peacemaking invention in human history.
A reminder not to take stable governance for granted. Peace requires institutions. It's fragile.
Absolutely. And then thinking about violence analytically, violence is not a force unto itself, but a tactic that is used to achieve a goal.
That's interesting. It depersonalizes it almost. It's a tool people use.
Right. And if it's just a tactic, you can change the context to make it a bad tactic, make it too costly, too likely to fail, or offer better nonviolent tactics to achieve the same goals. Change the cost-benefit calculation.
You don't have to make people saints. You just have to make violence unprofitable.
That's the idea. And finally, connecting reason and morality. Reason and science have made it harder to deny the humanity of others.
As we learn more, as we think more critically, it becomes logically harder to exclude whole groups of people from basic moral consideration.
Yeah, reason pushes towards universal principles, towards recognizing shared humanity. It fuels that expansion of the moral circle we talked about.
Okay, so for people listening, this is fascinating historically, but how does it apply to, you know, our lives? What are the practical takeaways?
I think the first is about how we consume information, cultivating a data-driven worldview.
So next time there's a horrific story dominating the news, pause.
Exactly. Pause and ask, is this awful event representative of a trend or is it an outlier? Try to seek out actual long-term data, not just the latest headline. It honestly reduces anxiety and gives you a more balanced perspective. It stops you from being constantly whipsawed by the news cycle.
That's good advice. What else?
Appreciating and supporting good institutions. The book really makes you value things that might seem boring, effective, accountable government, the rule of law, international cooperation, reliable courts.
These are just bureaucratic necessities. They are the structures actively keeping violence down.
Yes. So supporting efforts to strengthen democracy, transparency, education, economic interdependence, women's rights. These are actually practical violence prevention strategies, according to Pinker's logic.
And maybe something more personal.
Well, you can use the psychological framework, demons versus angels. In your own conflicts at work, at home, try to recognize when your inner demons are kicking in. That flash of anger, the desire to dominate, the urge for revenge.
Acknowledge it.
Acknowledge it, and then a consciously try to engage the better angels? Can I empathize here? Can I exercise self-control? Can I use reason to find a solution where everyone, or at least more people, win? It's about managing your own internal landscape.
That's quite practical. So wrapping up, what's your big final takeaway from diving back into this?
For me, it really was seeing the sheer weight of the statistical evidence laid out. It genuinely shifted my perspective on historical progress. It makes you realize peace isn't some default state we fall into. It's something actively constructed, something achieved through hard work and ingenuity. And the core lesson is that we need to keep tending to those constructions, the institutions, the norms, the ideas that have brought us this far.
Yeah, my reflection is similar. It's that feeling of evidence-based hope. It's not naive optimism, but a recognition that progress is possible and measurable, which feels important right now. And it leads to that final thought for you listening. Pinker identifies these historical forces, the state, commerce, reason, rights movements. What might be the next big pacifying force? Maybe something emerging from technology or global connectivity or new forms of social organization that we don't even fully recognize yet. What modern trend might future historians look back on as a key driver of peace? Something to think about.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.